You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Governments around the world are turning to private companies to create and maintain public infrastructure. Advocates claim public-private partnership improves service to the public and reduce the risk of cost overruns on public projects. Here in BC, the Canada Line Rapid Transit Project, the Sea to Sky Highway expansion, and the new Abbotsford Hospital are just three major infrastructure projects currently being built under private-public partnerships. Marvin Schaefer is an economist and adjunct professor in the public policy program at Simon Fraser University. This past Tuesday, he told an audience at the Vancouver Public Library that one thing private partnerships can't do is offer better value for money on flawed projects. Here is Marvin Schaefer.
When you start thinking about and talking about P3s, you get all caught up in a bunch of acronyms, DBs, DBOs, DBOFs, P3, PBC, PSCs. And as I was thinking about it, it reminded me of when I was a summer student working for the government of Manitoba in the policy planning section, and I had to do a review of the programming, planning, budgeting system. And I wrote this report, and on the title I put PPBS, mostly BS, and somehow that title got right to the person who implemented the system. And so as I was looking for work in the following week, I decided I'll try to keep the acronyms to a minimum and try to keep the pejorative stuff to a minimum as well. So what I'll talk about tonight briefly, and we'll have more chance in the discussion, is a bit about the rationale for public-private partnerships, P3s, and the nature of the value for money assessments that have been done and that are done to analyze them and in many cases to try to justify them. Public-private partnerships, as I'm sure many of you are well aware, in its broadest form is really just involving the private sector in the delivery of public infrastructure and service. And there's a wide range of ways in which that can be done. There's design build, the DB, the design build contracts, where government contracts with a firm not only to construct a project but to do the design, to try to get efficiencies in the design and the construction. There's design build operate contracts, where government will contract with a firm, like the GVRD has done in waste management, to design, build, operate a facility that's financed by the GVRD. And then there's the P3 that's clearly of greatest interest in this province and this time, which I call the full meal deal, which is the design, build, operate, and finance, where the government will contract typically with a consortium to design a facility, to construct it, to operate and maintain it, and to finance it, as opposed to government procuring it in different components and financing it through government debt. And so when we think about, well, what's the rationale for this? I go back to the original rationale, and this is nonpartisan. This is governments of all stripes. We're looking for the magic bullet to build infrastructure they didn't have to pay for, and to build infrastructure that would be off book. In other words, where the cost of that infrastructure wouldn't be part of the government accumulated debt. And that was clearly a major part of the rationale for these DBOFs, for getting the private sector to finance things that government had traditionally financed itself, roads, bridges, hospitals. For all the discussion of efficiencies, that was what was of greatest interest to the politicians. And you heard it even in the public press and the public media, for example, in the RAV project. I'll never forget listening to a report saying, the RAV costs are going up, but it's okay, the private sector is going to contribute more. They'll fill the gap. They'll enable us to build projects that we couldn't otherwise afford. The problem with that, of course, is that these projects aren't built on spec. You don't see SNC-Lavalin building a rapid transit project and selling the service on the marketplace. These projects are built on the basis of a very long-term lease with government, and that long-term lease provides the revenues that pays for the capital that the private sector puts in. And that long-term lease establishes a liability. Taxpayers have to pay over the next 25 years, provided the service is there, the infrastructure is developed, they have to pay that lease payment. So it's much like a decision with respect to a house. Instead of buying the house and taking out a mortgage yourself, You have somebody else pay for the house for you, but if you enter into a 25-year lease obligation, or you're stuck with that lease, you have to pay that, you have a long-term liability. And now accountants recognize that there is no magic bullet. There is no off-book financing of public infrastructure. We can't get the private sector to build projects we couldn't otherwise afford. They are, these P3s, a public debt, though in a different form, in the form of a long-term lease, every bit as much as a direct government debt. So in the current rationale for P3s, it's not about a way to avoid debt. It's not about a way to build things that we couldn't otherwise afford, because if you can't afford to do it yourself, you can't afford to do it through a P3. You still have the same long-term obligation. The current rationale is all about the way in which you can get the private sector to deliver services, to deliver infrastructure in ways that might be more cost-effective than if government were to do it itself. So you look to P3s to transfer more risk to the private developers than you otherwise could. You look to P3s to provide more private sector innovation, perhaps more vigorous management. And the goal is, of course, not so much to avoid the costs of the bridges and the rapid transit lines and everything else we're building, but to try to deliver those things in a less costly way with better performance and more benefits than otherwise. In the language of Partnerships BC, the current rationale for P3s is to try to get more value for money, to try to get a better project at lower cost with greater benefit. And so the question is, how do we assess this value for money? Do we in fact get value for money from the P3s that we've seen in BC? With a P3, what happens is the government ends, and I'm thinking of the full meal deal P3, the design, build, operate, finance. The government will contract with a consortium to design, to build, to construct, to operate and maintain over an extended period of time, typically 25 years, to finance particular infrastructure. So we have the Sea to Skies project that was done that way. We have the Canada Line, the RAV Line. I call it the RAV Line. I suppose now it's called the Canada Line. The Abbotsford Hospital, other facilities that are developed that way. And what the government agrees to do is to pay availability fees, basically lease fees, provided that the service and the infrastructure is developed and maintained in a way that meets the standards of the contract. In traditional public sector procurement and financing, the government would still get the private sector to do most of the work. It would enter into contracts with a particular firm to design, perhaps to design and build the facility. In the case of highways, it would enter into contracts with mainland contracting or other firms to operate and maintain. But the government would finance it, and the government would incur the debt servicing costs on whatever debt it needed to pay for the building of the project, the operating and maintenance costs for the ongoing operations of the facility. And in the value for money assessment, what's done is a basic comparison. How does the stream of lease payments that we expect to pay for the P3 compare to the operating and maintenance payments and the debt service payments we'd expect to pay with what Partnerships BC calls and what the value for money assessments call this public sector comparator, a traditionally procured and financed project? We've seen a couple of value for money reports come out in BC in the last year. One was for the Sea to Sky project. It was released in December of 2005. It was done by Partnerships BC. Another for the Canada Line RAV project, more recently released in April 2006. And they claim to demonstrate in those studies value for money, that these are better ways of developing that infrastructure than the public sector comparator, the traditionally procured and financed project. And I want to talk today about my own views on that, and although I'll try not to be pejorative, my conclusion is they don't demonstrate that at all, that they don't demonstrate value for money. And they raise very significant questions about where we're going in the future with the billions of dollars of infrastructure that we need to build in this province, in transportation, in healthcare, in education, in the full range of public services and facilities that we require. The first point I'd raise, and it's interesting, we're in a library, language should matter. And so these reports are all about value for money, and you'll see if you read them carefully, they'll say, after exhaustive, tedious, and complicated analysis, because we found, let's say in the RAV project, that their analysis of the P3 will be $90 million less than the public sector comparator overall, this demonstrates good value for taxpayers' dollars. And the problem with that is it doesn't address in any way the more fundamental question about the project itself. The more fundamental question about every project, every infrastructure project we build, is it a good project? Are the benefits there? How do the benefits compare to the cost? So in the Sea to Sky, and you'll find some analysis of this buried in these reports. So in the Sea to Sky project, for example, and I'm going to use a bit of economic jargon, I apologize for it, but the present value costs, in other words, we're trying to get, if you take all of the stream of payments over 25 years and figure out an equivalent number today, like paying today for that stream of money over 25 years, it was estimated to be $790 million for the Sea to Sky highway improvements. It's the improvements between Vancouver and Whistler. And the incremental costs, recognizing that if we didn't do this project, we'd still have operating and maintenance costs, we'd still have rehab costs. We're estimating this report to be some $650 million. So that's, in some ways, the additional resources we're putting into this project. And in this report, they found that the safety benefits, big argument for doing this, and the time-saving benefits, the other big argument for doing this, leave the Olympics to the side, which is the real reason for doing this, were estimated to have a value of $550 million. In other words, the net benefits, the benefits of this project in this value for money report were estimated to be $100 million less than the incremental costs and over $200 million less than the total cost of this project. In terms of a benefit-cost ratio, every dollar that's put into this project in the P3 will generate 85 cents of benefits, which is astonishing given the needs we have in transportation. This is a project that has a benefit-cost ratio in less than one, and there's projects out there, and I don't want to argue about them, but you can be sure there are many projects out there that have benefit-cost ratios much greater than that, not to mention more buses on Broadway. The RAB project is even more extreme. The RAB project, the present value costs, looking at the cost of building it, operating and maintaining it over the next 25, 30 years, have a cost of some $2.2 billion. And the estimated benefits reported in the value for money report were $800 million. In other words, there's a net cost of that project of $1.4 billion. That's how much the costs exceed the estimated benefits, the travel time and other transportation benefits of that project. The benefit-cost ratio for that's less than 0.4. In other words, for every dollar invested, you get 40 cents back. Again, it's an extraordinary expenditure of funds, extraordinarily inefficient, and it demonstrates that there is no value for money. I mean, the value for money conclusion, if you read the report, was based on a comparison between the P3 and a traditionally procured project, and they found a difference, and I think it based on very tenuous assumptions of some $90 million, which is really a rounding error in the $2.2 billion. In other words, what they found was, whether you build it as a P3 or whether you do it in a traditional way, this is a very expensive project, and it far exceeds the benefits it's going to provide. So my first quarrel with value for money, which is really stepping aside from the privatization debates and P3 debates, is the whole language is wrong. The common sense term of language, value for money, isn't addressed. What taxpayers care about, are they getting a good return for their investment? Not are they getting a marginally better one in a bad P3 project or a bad publicly financed project. That's my first concern. To the narrow question of the comparison between P3s and traditionally procured and financed projects, the so-called public sector comparator, there's a number of problems with these assessments that are done, these value for money assessments. The first one is the nature and the timing of the comparison that's done. What's done typically in these studies, at least we saw for Sea to Sky and RAV, is an analysis after the P3 contract was concluded, So this isn't a forward-looking decision-making analysis. This is a justification for a decision that's already been made. It's problematic in its own right. But it also compares the costs that are defined in a contract, the P3, with a hypothetical circumstance of a public sector comparator, a traditionally procured project that doesn't exist. So your benchmark, your key benchmark, is an abstraction, is a hypothetical, and it's compared to an actual contract. And that's very problematic. And the RAV value for money assessment really illustrates it well. In the RAV study, what they concluded was, actually it was the same in the Sea to Sky, the present value costs of the P3 were over $100 million more than the traditionally procured and financed hypothetical public sector comparator. But what they said was the station design and the frequency of service with the P3 would result in 34% more ridership than what you'd get if the government did it. Now, this is very bizarre to me because in both cases, TransLink is operating the service. So what they're saying with, in the contract, where they've worked very closely with SNC-Lavalin, figure out the station design, how many steps you have to go down to get to the station, where they're located, how much service will be offered, they realized they could do better than what they had originally thought. And that's why they have this higher ridership with the P3. But for some reason, in the hypothetical public sector comparator, same people operating the system, it's going to be TransLink that's running the service, those additional riders wouldn't appear. So you have a comparison that shows a marginal benefit for the P3, but it's based on an assumption that you're getting all this extra riders if you have the private sector design, build, and operate it, operate the facility, TransLink running the service, as compared to TransLink or the provincial government entering into a design build contract, operating and maintaining the system, and financing it itself. Very problematic comparison. You have to take these value for money assessments and recognize that they're not comparing apples with apples, they're comparing a contract with a hypothetical. More fundamental problem is the valuation of risk. A major issue, if you like, in value for money assessments is the value of the risk that's transferred to the private sector in P3s that wouldn't be transferred under a traditionally procured project. So in the Sea to Sky evaluation, they assumed that the benefits of the risk transfer, the additional risk that the private sector takes on, would be some $80 million. In the RAB project, it was $240 million. And it's a bunch of magic as to how they get those numbers. But the real point is, we have to ask taxpayers, do you really want to spend an extra $80 million to have more security on the total cost, to have a greater guarantee that there won't be cost overruns or underruns for that matter? It's like building a house. I use that analogy because it's similar to the financing question. You can fix the price of a house if you want to pay more, but you have to pay more. The question is, how much more do you want to pay to have that certainty? And these are major issues in the value for money assessments, very difficult to estimate, and yet have a major bearing on the conclusion. In a sense, the assumptions about the valuation of risk drive the conclusion about the preference for P3s. And they also assume that some of that risk benefit couldn't be achieved in a traditional model. Bear in mind, these projects, and I'm thinking of highway projects and rapid transit in particular, are built by the private sector. They're built under contract with government, in either case. And if you wanted to fix the price, you could do that in a traditionally procured project. If you have to decide what risks you want to fix, you don't fix all risks. You fix those risks that you think the private sector can manage better than you can. But there's not a great reason why you need to have the private sector finance a project to transfer a lot of risk, in particular, the risk of cost overruns, the risk of performance. You can have warranties on performance. You can have bonds on performance. We do this all the time. Another issue with the value for money assessments, and this is particularly true of Sea to Sky, more so than the RAV project, the one that was done by Partnerships BC, is the assumed cost of capital. You know, a major benefit I mean, one thing that government does well, and I'm the first to admit that government does not, and you have to work for government to know that government does not do many things well. But one of the things it does do well is borrow money. And the reason I say that is it's a very safe creditor. People like loaning money to the government. In fact, if you talk to people at the Municipal Financing Authority, they talk about liquidity. What do they mean? They want to have more debt out there because then they can get lower rates because people can trade it better in the marketplace. Governments get very low, very attractive financing rates. So when we go to a privately financed highway or a privately financed RAB project in part, we're giving up the benefit of that low cost, that low interest rate. Yet in the value for money assessment of the Sea to Sky project, what Partnerships BC did is make the assumption that regardless of what the actual interest rate government would pay in its traditionally procured project, it's going to assume it's the exact same cost as the cost of capital that the private sector incurs, which in that particular case was 7.5%. And in the case of the traditional government financing right now, I don't know the exact rates, but I'm pretty sure it'd be 5% or less, which makes a huge difference. These are capital projects. It's all about the interest rates. When you talk about another 2.5 percentage points on a $500 or $600 million project, you're talking $10 million a year or more. And so in this value for money assessment, what they did is they said, well, we're going to assume it's the same. And the reason we're going to do that, and they're explicit about it, is because when government borrows money, it's taking on responsibility and risk. And so really we should impute a charge to that equivalent to what the private sector says it needs in order to finance that. Well, it basically, first of all, in the case of the Sea to Sky, they've already added $80 million as a valuation of risk. So it's double counting the $80 million that they already added. But it also begs the question, are the risks and the return that the private sector demands to finance the project the same as the risks incurred by government when it finances a project? They're not. The private sector needs to worry about what's called contract risk. They'll run into governments that won't pay or want to change the rules. They have to build in an extra return for that. The private sector needs a return on the equity that it puts in, comparable to the return it could earn in investments around the world. Public sector doesn't need that. In other words, in this value for money assessment, there was a bias against the public sector comparator by ignoring the benefit of public financing. Not to say that you should always go to the public sector. Not to say I shouldn't speak faster. It tells you that these analyses are not doing the job they should do, which is to identify the difference in costs based on what government would actually pay or what we expect government would actually pay, what you'll have to pay under the lease, and then recognize there's a difference in the risks and making the assessment of the trade-off. So in work that I've recently have done, I estimated that the difference in the cost for the Sea to Sky project, if you recognize the real cost that government borrows at, is $220 million. That's the higher cost of the P3. Then you can ask yourself the question, is it worth it? The P3 provides some benefit. The question is, does it provide $220 million of benefit on a $600 million project? I think not. And the final point, and it's very much related to this, is the weighting of future costs. In technical terms, the discount rate, the discounting of future costs. When we enter into a P3 or even into debt service, we're imposing obligations on taxpayers for the next 25 years. And the question is, what weight do we give to the payments 25 years from now? And in the value for money assessments that Partnerships BC has done, they give relatively little weight. They use the time value of money that the private sector needs based on the rate of return that it could earn, not the interest rate that the taxpayers face, the weight that we would want to give to the imposition, the liabilities we're imposing on future generation. So just to give you a sense of the importance of this, using the discount rate that Partnership BC used, the weighting that it gave to future costs, the present value cost of the Sea to Sky project, operating and maintenance costs, construction, everything, was $790 million. If you use a discount rate that reflects government's borrowing rate, something that would give you an equivalent present value from a taxpayer point of view, the cost is $1 billion. And if you just added up the cost, what is it that we're going to be spending over the next 25 years on this project? It's almost $2 billion. So this really matters. We have to really consider the weight that we attach to future expenditures. So I'm going to wrap up because Shannon wants me to wrap up. And I've said enough in any event, and we can come back to more. My plea is this. I take a very agnostic view of these things. I don't think it has to be an ideological issue. The question is, what is a better way of looking at the development of public infrastructure and public service? And the first thing I'd say is we need a good business case, first and foremost, and we haven't had that. We're wasting billions of dollars on inefficient projects and then quarreling about whether one way is marginally better than another. Business case first. The second thing is I think we have to recognize that there are advantages in the private sector constructing, designing, and in some cases operating and maintaining facilities. And there's clearly advantages to the public sector in getting the lowest cost financing rate for doing that. And we should be trying to meld the two. We shouldn't have to look at an either or. We should be looking at the optimal way to contract for the facilities that we determine are worthwhile. And that's going to require more public funding of these projects, but that's nothing to be afraid of. Public funding means debt service. Private funding means lease obligations. There's still future obligations, but we want obligations that are going to be lower in cost. And we have to recognize that if there's benefits and risk transfer, we should look at the lowest cost way of